the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Happy Thursday! It is Thursday, July 4th. Happy Independence Day for our friends listening south of the border. And welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Development camp underway for the Calgary Flames out at Winsport. Day one of three on the ice is all wrapped up. And lots more to come from Winsport.
Busy day down there.
Was it busy?
Yeah, lots of fans. I assume that's why we didn't run into each other.
Okay. Right under the bus.
I've been waiting all day for that.
You know what? I don't even feel the slightest bit guilt for not being there today.
Patrick, you might be the busiest guy in Calgary these next 11 days, and you have every reason not to be there.
I'm going to try to come to the scrimmage on Saturday, though.
I know I'll see you there, buddy. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I'll get you back for that.
Yeah, I know you will. I know you will.
Hey, do we ever talk about goaltending on this show? Has that ever been a topic?
I think we might have touched on that once or twice.
We are going to talk about goaltending, but I've got good news for those who accused us of sensationalizing the Jacob Markstrom situation and making things up about how he was going to get traded. I know we made things up that was all a fabricated story. But we're not going to talk about Jacob Markstrom. We know that. We're not talking about Marky. But I am fascinated with how this goaltending situation is going to shape up, because this is going to be a really interesting season between the pipes. I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know what it's going to look like over 82 games. But I am fascinated by it with Dustin Wolf, Dan Vladar, and now Devin Cooley as the three options that are going to get NHL time this year. And we're talking about three very similar goaltenders when it comes to NHL experience. I'm not talking about style. I'm not talking about upside or anything about that. But just when it comes to how much NHL experience they've got. Like, Dan Vladar is the seasoned vet here, and he's not even into triple digits in NHL games. Then it's Dustin Wolf, and then Devin Cooley with his six appearances.
I believe it's 88 career starts between the three of
combined,
them.
Combined, they're not even in three figures, right? This is a very, it's a very inexperienced group, and I think this is a good thing to have for where the Flames are and for where they want to be going here. A year like this, and maybe a few years like this, when you're talking about guys competing for playing time, showing the organization what they are, I've got no problem with that. I think it's going to be a really healthy thing this year with Dustin Wolf as kind of that blue chip, or the blue chipper that so many hope is going to be the goalie of the future. And, you know, Dan Vladar with all this potential, but coming off the hip surgery, and then this complete wild card that I know the Flames are super fond of and the goalie community is super fond of, and Devin Cooley. And then to have the three of them competing for ice time and playing time in the highest league, with the American League being a possibility as well, I think, for all three. I am fascinated with how this is going to play itself out.
Yeah, and I agree with you that, you know, this is the right way to start to go about it, at least from my vantage point. And I'm going to kind of swerve off course, and hopefully everyone will understand when I...
Are we going to talk about Mangiapane again?
I got a few more things to say. If you go back to last summer, there was quite an uproar in this city when Matthew Phillips left as a free agent. And the Matthew Phillips discussion centered around, because you didn't play him at the NHL level, how do you know what you have there, right? Did you find out in Matthew Phillips' tenure in your organization exactly what kind of potential he might have, what, you know, what he might be capable of? And so then to go back to the goalies, I think the biggest mistake you could make at this point is not figuring out what you have. And I don't think you know what you have in Dan Vladar. He had a ton of appeal to you 3 years ago when you sort of identified him as a guy that you were interested in on waivers if he got there, or that you're willing to trade for because Boston had sort of committed to Jeremy Swayman? And remember, like, that was considered a coin flip in Boston for quite a while, whether Swayman or Dan Vladar was yep. the goaltender of the future there. And then obviously you have Dustin Wolf, a guy that we've talked about once or twice as a guy who needs an opportunity to prove he deserves a full-time NHL job. And so bringing in Devin Cooley, another younger, inexperienced guy, he's not getting in the way of finding out what you have in the other two. And that's what I think is such an important first step for the Flames when it comes to goaltending is, okay, what does Dan Vladar with a repaired hip look like? Okay, what does Dustin Wolf getting 30 or 40 starts in an NHL season look like? Mm-hmm. And then you can make a more educated evaluation on what the future of your goaltending looks like.
I think this is the perfect situation to have if you're the Flames right now. You know, last year when the group was still trying to see how competitive they were 2 years ago, like, no, this would not have been ideal. But success, and nobody's suggesting, and I always get my backup when people say, well, you can't try to lose. Nobody's suggesting they're trying to lose. But the way they're going about building their team for this year is it's not a team that is hell-bent on having success this year. From the top, management is not concerned about, we have to make the playoffs this year, we have to be this good and have this many points this year. There's an understanding this is going to be a process, and anything on top of, you know, what the realistic expectations are, anything on top of that's just gravy. It's not like they're going to say, no, don't win, we don't want to succeed. But if they don't, it's not like losing's okay, but there's an understanding this is a growth process. And part of that is the growth process with your goaltending position.
If I can just chip this in, because this is the way I've been trying to describe it to people. It's not that you're not trying to win. It's that for, you know, the first time, I think, and a lot of Flames fans have been waiting for this, for the first time in a long time, you've sort of identified what you think your window to try to win in will be.
Yeah.
And it's not right away. And so this isn't about trying to lose games, but it's about putting together the pieces of the puzzle so that X number of years from now, we think we're going to be a competitive group, right? And that window, depending on, you know, who you talk to or maybe what your guess is probably 3 to 5 years down the road. But guess what you're going to need when you think you're a competitive team? You're going to need a really, really good goalie. Mm-hmm. And the starting point of that is figuring out whether that player, that puck stopper, is already in house.
Yep. Yeah, it's important to have these, and there will be growing pains, I think, when it comes to this goaltending situation. Yeah. And it's important to go through those growing pains, because part of those struggles and part of that process is going to be, to your point, about just that, learning about what you have as an NHL goaltending department. And what you have with all of these guys. I think you're right. And I don't think the Flames would ever, at this stage, I don't think there's any worry about this happening. But it would be a travesty if you let Dustin Wolf go elsewhere and you didn't know what he is at the NHL level. Now, I don't think I think Jordan Sigalet would sacrifice many things before ever letting that happen. Same is true with Craig Conroy. He's a huge fan of him. But I also think it's important to point out that the same is true with both Vladar and Cooley. And we're talking about all guys that are, you know, within a few years of one another. Cooley's only 26. Vladar's what, 26, 27?
Yeah.
I think 26.
I believe Cooley's 27. Dan Vladar turns 27 in August.
Okay. So he'll be 27 for this year. And Devin Cooley just turned 27 in May.
Okay. So you've got essentially the same.
You got two 27-year-olds and a 22-year-old, 23-year-old.
Yeah.
You got, that's very young in goaltending terms.
Yeah, and I think the number that matters more is the number that you and I both outlined already, and that's experience.
88 games.
Yeah, 88 games of NHL experience. You know, Devin Cooley might be 27. He's played six games, and when I spoke to director of goaltending Jordan Sigalette about him a couple days ago. One of the things he said is, you know, because of his age and experience combined, he's a guy who he's played six games, but they've all, keep in mind, been within the past few months, right? Yep. He made his NHL debut on St. Patrick's Day. And so the one thing that Jordan pointed out to me is that, you know, there's a real hunger there. That's another guy who isn't satisfied to be the third string. Is he going to start as the third string? Absolutely. But that's a guy they think can push.
And that's why I say don't sleep on Cooley here. Because this is a guy that is thought very fondly of by both the Flames and their goaltending department. This was not only their number one target in terms of a free agent goalie, but I kind of want to say their only target. Not to say they didn't have contingency plans, mm-hmm. but Devin Cooley was so much the guy that they wanted and was at the very top of their board that it was kind of him or bust in a lot of ways. And they got him without any issue. They signed him to the 2-year deal. He's on a one-way next season, or the second season. He's on a two-way this coming year. But, like, don't sleep on what the potential might be here. And it's not just because of what Jordan Sigalette and Jason LaBarbera and Mackenzie Skapski, who are all involved in these conversations, not just because of what they think, but it's what goalie experts, like in the second hour of this Thursday program, Kevin Woodley's going to join us. He is extremely high on Devin Cooley. A lot of the other goalie gurus, goalie nerds are feeling like this guy's mix of skill and size and quickness is one that you really can't overlook. And then listen to him talk about himself. This was from Monday when he joined us. I mean, this is a guy who I think spells out where he is in his pro career pretty well as well.
I feel like I'm really starting to turn a corner here. I mean, obviously for me, I was a late bloomer my entire career. So it's like in college and juniors, like everywhere, I've just been like a really late bloomer. And I still feel like I'm a late bloomer, and I still feel like I have a ton of space to grow. And I feel like I can become a much better goalie, you know, as time goes on. And that's what I'm working towards. And I feel like I have all the tools necessary to be a successful goalie in the NHL. And I have the work ethic. I have the motivation. For me, I just think it's a matter of time.
Where are the areas that you look to and say, hey, this is these are parts of my game that I really need to improve on and that I need to get better at?
Yeah, I would say just using my size is the biggest thing, because I sometimes play really small. I'm a really mobile, quick goalie, but I think with that, it comes with like a little bit scrambly, a little bit out of control, a little bit like really getting too low and exposing, you know, the top corners. And I feel like if I can slow myself down, calm myself down a little bit, and just use my size, pucks are just going to start hitting me a lot more. And then I also want to just work on just some basic positioning is my biggest thing. Because again, like, I feel like for so long I was able to rely on my quickness and mobility to bail me out of having poor positioning. But at the NHL level, like, you can't really do that no matter how fast, no matter how quick you are. Like, you're going to get picked apart. So I really, this offseason, really just focused on positioning, being a lot bigger in the net. I've changed my stance a little bit. I'm a little bit more upright when I go down in the butterfly as well. And I'm really excited to start testing that out in game situations.
Like, when you hear a goalie break down his game like that and break down his weaknesses like that and yeah. what he needs, you don't hear that very often. You don't hear like, hey, this is where my strengths are, but I've got to hone in my strengths. I got to focus my strengths, and then I'm going to be that much better of a goalie. I'm a late bloomer. I'm just learning all this now. Like, you don't hear that. So even the honesty there in terms of what he needs to do, I thought was super refreshing. The Flames have been very interested in this guy for months now, going back to when the season was on. Like, I want to say going back to, you know, January, February,
right.
I think the Flames have had their eye on this guy.
When he was still
longer.
Buried in Buffalo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he gets to San Jose. His last two games were awful, including an 8-goal outing against the Oilers. Like, that's going to hurt your save percentage. But his first four starts, really strong, including his first two wins. He beat St. Louis, and then he had that 49-save performance against Seattle. You're like, okay,
yeah.
Hold on a second. There's something here. But the Flames didn't think he was going to be available. So they thought with what he did in March and April that San Jose would be like, yeah, we want to make sure that you're still in the fold. So when San Jose decided to move away and allow him to get to unrestricted free agency, I know the Flames saw this as, holy, this is a massive opportunity that we can't miss. And that's why I keep saying, with a goaltending department that has had a pretty good track record here over the last 5+ years since it was kind of instituted, I think there's reason to be excited with this young man too.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what transpired in San Jose, whether they made him any sort of offer, whether, you know, a sticking point was the term and the potential, or not the potential, the fact that it upgrades to a one-way in the second year here in Calgary. But, you know, one of the questions I asked him, because we were talking about San Jose and what it meant to play in his hometown.
Just like Dustin Wolf, yeah, right. He's a no-cal guy.
Yeah,
right?
Came up through the Junior Sharks program. And so I asked him, you know, well, why, like, is that tough to leave? Is it tough to leave home? And he said to me, and I don't have the quote up in front of me, but I remember it perfectly. He said to me, at this point in my career, opportunity trumps everything. And that's in Calgary.
Yep.
And I just thought, man, that what a perfect mindset for a guy who's coming in to fight for something above the position of third goalie. And I know, you know, for Devin Cooley and for other guys, one of the great appeals in Calgary now, and I think you'd hear this from almost any guy who signs as an NHL AHL tweener, is the fact that they know what city they're going to be living in, as opposed to, you know,
you're in Calgary, period.
Go to camp, yep, and hope for the best. And obviously that's the case in San Jose as well, but not many other cities. And so I do think that was part of the appeal. But there's, as you said, a lot of excitement about what they can do with Devin Cooley, what they can mold him into. You know, he talked there about sort of calming his game down. And I know that that's already on Mackenzie Skapski's radar as the Calgary Wranglers goalie coach. I'm curious to see where this one goes.
This was Craig Conroy when I asked him about Devin Cooley on Monday's show as well.
It's the upside. He's big. He moves well. Again, maybe not as experienced in NHL games, but we even got to see him play against us this year. And,
yep,
you know, when goalies, coaches kind of rate goalies and, you know, the movement, where they are in the post, the way they track pucks, there's a lot to it. And they really felt like there was big, big upside with Devin. So, you know, that's what I said. Now we have three goalies really battling for those spots. And that's what it's all about. You know, you don't want to ever just hand it to someone, but, you know, like I said earlier, you're going to have nobody's going to be working harder than these three goalies to kind of get ready, be in camp, and earn that starting position.
And that's the really interesting part as well, because I don't think you have to squint very much, if at all, to see a situation where all three guys get decent NHL playing time this year. And that's not to say that means Dustin Wolf's getting sent to the American League to start. No, not at all. It just, injuries happen.
Yeah.
And performance dips happen. Like, we don't know what Dustin Wolf is going to be as a full-time NHLer this year. I fully expect, and for the sake of who I'm sitting across from, I fully demand that Dustin Wolf starts the year the NHL roster. You hear that? I demand that. But
thank you. Thank you for that.
For you.
Thank you for that.
But who knows? Like, what if he does have a dip and it's like, oh, you know what? He's struggling here. It's December. He's hit a wall. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I don't even know if I think this is super likely, but it's not completely out of the question. Mm-hmm. You're like, you know what? Dustin needs a month in the American League, and let's go with Cooley and Vladar for a little bit. Injuries, so on and so forth. All of this type of stuff is in the potential, path here. And so, to have three guys, I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Well, to, you know, even just look, if you go through the years, and there might be a couple or three or four teams every single season that get by with just using two goalies, right? Like, if you go through and look at every team's goaltending stats last year, I can't imagine there were more than a handful that only used two guys the entire season. And I think what you're saying is we might see more Cooley than you see in that third slot elsewhere. And certainly, especially one thing about Dan Vladar coming off hip surgery, like, that's the sort of injury you can be on track for, like, you can be on track to be ready for the start of camp for a long time and suddenly be like, I need a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. And so you have that insurance policy too with Cooley.
Yep. What's your feel on Wolf this year? Like, does he get 40 plus starts, do you think?
I think he gets 35 plus. I do think when the season ends, maybe I already want to go down to 30 plus. I do think when the season ends, you're probably going to have seen a touch more of Dan Vladar than anyone else. Although, like, I think this thing is an open competition in the most pure sense of it. I really believe that while if the puck dropped tomorrow night, Dan Vladar, assuming he's fully recovered from hip surgery, would be your opening night starter. But I think, like, I actually think in preseason this whole thing can change. You?
I think, yeah, 40 to 45. I think that's...
Yeah?
I think that's...
You think he has the most on the team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that with Dan coming back from hip surgery, with Dustin being the guy who, and this is no knock on anybody else, but I think Dustin is the most organizationally important guy at the position.
Sure.
I think you prioritize his starts. Now, that's if there is a stretch where he really struggles and you feel like maybe backing off his NHL time is important, there's nothing wrong with that. And if that happens, that's not a disaster. Mm-hmm. This is a long process for a 23-year-old goaltender in an older man's position in the NHL. Like, we're talking 27, 28 is when a lot of goalies really start to hit stride or get themselves settled in this league. So if he needs that, there's nothing wrong with that. But all things, if things go generally according to plan, yeah, I think 40 to 45 starts for Dustin Wolf, I think that's very fair.
You know, one thing I'm going to watch very closely with Dustin Wolf and his usage this season is, listen, I know that Dustin is as confident as they come. He's a very tough guy to, you know, rattle. We've heard plenty at the AHL level about his sort of bounce back ability and his ability to just retain his confidence when things don't go very well. And yet I sort of wonder about some of those real upper echelon opponents this year, if you don't shield Dustin a little bit just to make sure that he doesn't have more tough nights than you want your goalie of the future to have.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, if some of those Edmontons and Colorados and Florida's, like, I wonder if Dan Vladar gets some more of those starts against the most high octane offenses. Not all of them, but more of them, just to make sure that you're not throwing Dustin Wolf into the deep end.
Yep, and that's fair. Read you. The last thing before we hit the text line, the goaltending department and just the way the goaltending ladder is setting up, I think it looks pretty promising. And there's no guarantees at this silly position, but you've got your three NHL potentials right away, Wolf and Cooley and Vladar, and maybe one of them becomes a trade chip, maybe one doesn't, who knows. But then when you take a look at the younger goalies that are starting to populate here, whether I know the goalie department's still really high on Connor Murphy, the Flames really like what his potential could be. Radomski spent time in the pros, both in the American League and the ECHL last year. You've got Igor Igorov, who was drafted last year and had incredible numbers in Russia. They just drafted another Russian goaltender this year. You know, it's starting to shape up like there's some, you know, the ladder is still fitting pretty nicely for this organization. And I know they're also super excited about Igorov and what he could be down the road.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tweet out a link during the break, but I had a great chat with Igorov today. Young guy from Russia who speaks really good English, who, you know, grew up following, would wake up in the morning and watch Columbus Blue Jackets highlights because that's where Sergei Bobrovsky, his idol,
Bob's his guy,
was playing at the time. And as part of that, and I encourage you to go check it out, I had a really interesting conversation with Jordan Sigalet about just the development of Russian goalies. You know, in the last 4 years, we've seen the Calgary Flames pick, basically their last three draft choices as goalies were all born in Russia. You've got Arseny Sergeyev.
I forgot about Sergeyev when I was talking about the goalies as well.
You've got Yegor Yegorov, and then Kirill, is it Zarubin?
Zarubin, yeah.
Yeah, the latest. And so some really interesting stuff on why he thinks that development model, which is obviously pumping out, you know, like there's no question Russia is producing the best goalies in the world right now, from Bobrovsky to Vasilevsky to Sorokin to Shesterkin to Alexander Georgiev. Like, that has just become a factory for goalies, and it's curious to see the Flames tap into it. They think they have some good ones, albeit on an extended timeline there.
Let's hit the text line at 960-960. This says, all three guys are going to get lit up, be lucky to win 30 games this year. Remember the blasty years? When's Connie going to buy out Huberdeau? That's the real question. Okay, it's a grumpy person. Few grumpy people on the text line. I don't Stampede. We should be happy.
People have been clamoring for a youth movement here. Absolutely clamoring. Yes, you know what? They might only win 30 games next year. And
it's part of the process.
Yeah, it really is.
This says, Wolf is not NHL material. Vladar and Cooley are the tandem. You're going to see after a few games, Wolf is not NHL material. Well, I've seen a number of games last year. He looked like belonged in the NHL to me, but we'll wait see how that plays out. On Wolf, this says, I feel like expectations are way too high for a seventh round pick. I understand he's been the best at every level he's played at, but still, I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves calling him the goalie of the future. I think what we said is they hope he's the potential goalie of the future. This says, Devin Cooley is such a good speaker, especially for a guy that hasn't been in the league very long. He's refreshingly good at expressing himself. He's kind of the anti-goalie, is what I've been told. Like,
yeah.
Game day, well, sure. Yeah.
I mean, he's got some goalie quirks. He'd be the first to tell you. But, yeah, great talker. Let me share one cool goalie tidbit that I forgot.
Yeah.
I forgot to include it in my story today. I just think it's kind of a funny anecdote. So Kirill Zarubin, the Flames' third round pick, number 84 overall, this year was watching the draft in Russia. He'd been tracking Saturday, you know, looking at all the picks come up. Well, he lost his Wi-Fi connection at number 81. Didn't get it back until number 90, and by that point, he'd been picked.
He still found out.
Yeah,
it was still a surprise to him when he found out.
Yeah.
I know that Sigalette and the Flames are super pumped that he was there. He was one of their four targets, and they got one of their four targets, so I know they were super pumped about that as well.
I know Jordan told me that he had other teams tell him, you weren't getting that guy in the fourth round. We were just about to take him.
And a few other goalie nerds texted me, were like, that's a great pick.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Patton
West.
So.
Exactly. Goalies, I will always defer to the experts, especially at that position. Always defer to the experts, but especially at that position. Steinberg and Wes along with you. This hour of Flames Talk from the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boy, has it been a busy week in the NHL since free agency opened on Monday. Heck, if you go back to Friday's first round to where we are 6 days later, boy, it's been a busy week. And the Pacific Division has been busy. Heck, the province of Alberta has been busy. We know what the Flames did in unrestricted free agency, plus the 10 players they selected at the draft. Oilers have been busy. Canucks have been busy. Let's say hello to our Pacific Division insider. After a brief hiatus when things got a little haywire, we say hello to Jonathan Davis from NHL Network right now. Hello, JD. How we doing?
We're good. I mean, you know, it's I get to benefit from July 1st, you know, being Canadian, and then the other half of me gets to enjoy today, July 4th. And then tomorrow, Pat, tomorrow the calendar turns for me one more year.
So oh, happy birthday. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So happy 35th and happy Independence Day and happy
35th, Pat. 30. 30.
Oh, well, I wanted to be realistic.
God. Okay.
and happy belated Canada Day as well for our dual citizen friend.
Yeah.
What We've talked so much about what the Flames have done, but I do have to ask you about people are raving, especially in that city. People are raving about what the Edmonton Oilers have done. So they retained a number of players from their run to Game 7. They retained Corey Perry. They retained Matthias Janmark. They were able to keep Adam Henrique from going elsewhere. And they also added. They added Jeff Skinner, who was bought out by Buffalo, so they got him on a real good value one-year deal at $3 million. And they added a former King in Victor Arvidsson on a two-year deal at $4 million per. Overall, what do you make of the work the Oilers have done, as especially at forward, they assemble one of the more terrifying groups we've seen in quite some time?
Yeah, you're not supposed to be able to do that when you get to the Cup Final. I mean, you know, it's remarkable what they've been able to do, and you know, credit interim GM Jeff Jackson for being able to pull this off. But you know, look, I think a lot of it tells you about, you know, the guys that they were able to retain, you know, especially Henrique. I think, you know, look, he would have fit in a lot of different cities, but I think that these guys look at the opportunity that they have in Edmonton, and you know, this is where you can put out the argument about who cares about no state tax. These are guys that just see an opportunity to win. That's what they want, and they made it work. So I love what's happened. And then, yeah, sure, you be adding Arvidsson and adding Skinner. I mean, you know, that's just something that this Edmonton team has needed for quite some time. You know, to have that offensive depth, it takes the pressure off a lot of guys. And look, the key for Arvidsson is health. That's been the issue. But man, when healthy, look, Pat, I think I've said it to you before. I think he's a better playmaker than he is a scorer. So I love what the Oilers have done, and it just makes them just as scary, and maybe even more. You know, I think scarier than they were last year, because I think that going into the season, you know, Stuart Skinner was a question mark. And I think that he's at least answered a lot of those questions after what we saw in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yep. And now two Skinners. The only thing that I would say about the Oilers is that they didn't really, and the way Broberg really came into his own in the postseason, I think probably helps with this on the urgency scale. And we know what Ekholm's all about. But I was a little surprised they didn't target on defense. Look, their forward group looks ridiculous when you scope out their depth. I was just a little surprised they didn't target anybody on defense in free agency.
I think that's fair, and I think that. But I think that if you look at, okay, they weren't going to get a guy on the top end, you know, meaning they weren't going to get, whether it was going to be a Pesci, a Shea, like that was out of their price point. And are you really better off with, you know, Ian Cole or Joel Edmondson, who we'll get to in a little bit. Are you better off spending your money there, or are you better off spending your money up front? And, you know, you take a look at your blue line, and it's still, that group still got you to the Stanley Cup final. So I think that, you know, when you're just deciding, okay, how are we going to spend it? I think the money was still well spent considering what the options were.
Right. Yeah, I got to say, I was pretty impressed with the forward group anyway that they added to. And they were able to keep a couple of key members. We all know how important Henry
was. Well, that's the thing. I mean,
and Janmark.
Yeah. Right. I mean, look, okay, so they lose Warren Fogle to Los Angeles. But, you know, you keep the rest of the group. And as you said, the upgrade that you added with Arvidsson. You know, and Jeff Skinner. I mean, so yeah. Look, I hear you about the blue line. I just don't think that with the dollars that they had available, who were they going to spend the dollars that they necessarily spent for Arvidsson and Skinner? What defensemen were they going to get themselves at that price point?
Yeah. What about Vancouver? They definitely lost. I mean, Zadorov leaves them. We know Lindholm leaves them. But they did add quite a bit. They add Jake DeBrusk on their biggest deal, 7 years times 5.5. They added Danton Heinen in free agency as well. Then on defense, they added a couple of depth pieces in Derek Forbort and Vinny Desharnais, who played, of course, with the Oilers and was a part of them going to the Stanley Cup final as well. The Canucks, did they get better? Did they get worse? Are they just treading water from what happened last year? How do you see Vancouver's work in free agency?
I like what they did. I mean, again, you know, they were kind of limited with, you know, without having to rip apart the roster. You know, can't Jake DeBrusk be Vancouver's version of Zach Hyman? I mean, you know, this was a guy, I think DeBrusk needed he had to change area codes. It just, the whole Boston thing was not working for him. It just, it wasn't a good fit. And that, look, part of that has to go on the player, and part of that has to go on the coaches. But it just, I think that he will benefit in, you know, from the change. Desharnais, I mean, look, 2 years ago, I think, you know, I thought Vincent Desharnais had kind of taken that next step, and then he ends up losing his job this year to Broberg, but he fits the style of Rick Tocchet. I mean, he is that physical presence. He becomes a cheaper version of Zadorov. And you know, Heinen, serviceable player, bottom six guy, you know, not going to hurt you, not necessarily, you know, not going to help you a great deal. But I like what they did, because I don't think that they take a step back. And even from a talent standpoint, even if they're at the same level as they were last year, hey, look, they're a year wiser, as we like to say, or at least I like to say. So I like what Vancouver did, because I think really the big key is you didn't take a step back.
Yeah.
I don't think they did. I mean, do you think, tell me if you feel differently.
I mean, I think they're fine on the blue line. I think that they probably leveled out on the blue line. I know Zadorov was a big impact maker there, but I think they'll be fine on defense. I do wonder, though, with Lindholm leaving, especially with what he did in the playoffs, are they, how much further or ahead are they or behind are they with DeBrus? They're different players, right? So
yeah,
that's my only, that's the only thing that I worry a little bit about, because Lindholm was very underwhelming during his regular season time there while he was getting through injury, but once he was in the postseason, boy, was he a real impact maker for him.
Right, but you couldn't afford to keep him, right? Not you couldn't spend those dollars. So if you're not going to be able to spend the dollars for Lindholm, then you've got to go, okay, what's our next best option? And you've got a guy that scores, and scoring is just obviously so hard. So I think, you know, you've got a guy, I mean, I think that there's some untapped potential in Jake DeBrusk. And I think it was worth, the shot for Vancouver to make that move.
Mm-hmm. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He's our Pacific Division insider. NHL Network joins us here on Flames Talk this hour. Let's head closer to your neck of the woods. Let's start in San Jose, who shockingly used the first overall selection on Macklin Celebrini. But I'm interested with the...
Did not see that coming.
No, I was pretty stunned by that. On the draft floor, I almost fell over. But they go out, and I'm really interested about a couple of the signings they make of pretty established NHLers, in Tyler Toffoli and Alex Wennberg. Wennberg signs for 2 years at $5 million. Toffoli signs for 4 years at $6 million. And I wonder if that is that the Celebrini-Will Smith effect, that players see these guys and say, hey, here's an opportunity to go play with two, you know, blossoming studs here. Let's see if that can help my point totals and see if we can help grow with something that looks like it's heading in the right direction.
Okay, I don't want to besmirch either player. This is not about, you know, trying to tarnish a player. They got a nice payday. And I don't think it's about, look, by the time that Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini can, I think, make an impact, you know, it may be by the end of Tyler Toffoli's deal and that this roster can make an impact. I think that this was a matter of, they got paid. I mean, I don't fault them for it. I really thought, you know, it was my understanding that L.A. was in on Toffoli, but they weren't going to be in on him at $6 million. I don't know. You know, so I think a lot of it has to do with dollars that were being given. I think San Jose had to pay a tax. At the same point, I think these are the type of guys that help your roster. There's no question about it. And they can help the young kids. There's no question. But I really think it was all, I think the money was more of a factor to, you know, for me, I mean,
you're probably like, really I don't think Toffoli was getting 4x6 in very many places. I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah. And so, and again, I don't knock the guy for taking the deal. I don't know what the other offers were, but there's no question that San Jose had to pay more. I feel pretty confident in saying that, yeah, San Jose had to overpay for Tyler Toffoli. And hey, look, why not? He's got his cup. And who knows? The way the cap is going, it may be a deal where, you know, look, he may find himself somewhere else again. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But I don't think it's about those guys saying, we want to play with these two young studs. Okay. I don't think that was.
I was trying to make it a nice feel good story. A couple of vets trying, but I appreciate pouring cold water on that.
I'm just trying to be honest.
I love honesty. Honesty is important.
Yeah. I think. Look, you don't want to BS your listeners, right? I don't think that's fair.
What about SoCal? What jumped off the page with you with both LA and Anaheim? LA adds Fogle. They lose, as we talked about, Victor Arvidsson. What did we make about Anaheim's work and Los Angeles's work? Again, Anaheim pretty quiet, as you'd expect on the signing front there.
Well, okay. First off, I do want to say, because I don't want to forget, it is my understanding that Anaheim did make legitimate offers to both Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault. Okay. So it was not without trying. I totally understand why both those guys, you know, took the offers that they did and went where they did. So there was an interest in, you know, at least they reached out, realistic or not, that they did do that, and give Pat Verbeek credit, because they're trying to add more pros to this roster. And that's what they did in bringing in Robbie Fabbri. I think, look, ultimately they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Trevor Zegras and John Gibson. I think they'd like to move Gibson. It's my understanding that Pat Verbeek has been reluctant to keep salary on that deal. I don't know how he could make the deal without eating some salary. So we'll see what happens in Anaheim. There's a lot of time between now and the start of the season. In Los Angeles, Pat, they're not any better than they were last season with the moves that they made. The one thing that Rob Blake did do, and, you know, when I asked him the question about, you know, players needing to hate to lose more than they enjoy winning, mm-hmm, in Los Angeles, and he basically called his team soft. Well, you can see the additions that he made to this roster in adding Joel Edmondson, adding Tanner Jeannot, you know, those two in particular. I wouldn't say necessarily Fogle fits into that. He did trade for Kyle Burrows from San Jose, who will, you know, likely, you know, maybe he's a seventh or eighth D-man, or he's playing, you know, for their AHL team, the Ontario Reign. But he did try to bring in toughness. I don't think the roster got any better. I don't understand, like, giving Joel Edmondson a four-year deal at $3.8 million. I don't understand that. Like, that to me is, that's just, I don't, Ian Cole gets 1 year at $3.1 million. I don't know who else. I mean, maybe Edmondson had other offers. I just don't know why you had to give the guy four for a guy that's so often injured. If Tanner Jeannot can be the guy that he was in Nashville, that's going to help. No question about it. But the big question still remains in Los Angeles. And what I thought that Rob Blake would do, like, the ideal player for him, if he was available, would have been Adam Henrique. Because in my opinion, they need a guy that can play both center and wing. In case the Byfield thing doesn't work out the way they would like, in him being one of the three centers, or, you know, the other thing for LA is, you know, I try to put this team, like, try to group their top six forwards in pairs. And so you've got Kopitar and Kempe. But the one thing that Anze Kopitar has always needed or always wanted, not necessarily needed, but always had on his line is a puck retriever. That guy was Quinton Byfield. Well, if he moves to center, he ain't the puck retriever anymore. So who is that guy? Does it become Warren Fogle for a bit? Like, I don't, that's not your ideal, you know, top line winger. So I'm not crazy about what LA did. I just don't think they got themselves better than they were a year ago. And look, this is a critical year for Rob Blake, you know, in the final year of his contract. And, you know, look, if Rob Blake was not to be renewed, you know, I do wonder, you know, how that would affect Jim Hiller, who did sign a 3-year deal with an extension. But I also believe, and this is, again, like, I don't want to see anybody lose a job, but I'm sure it's not at a price that ownership wouldn't mind, you know, wouldn't necessarily be concerned about eating salary. So this is a critical year in Los Angeles. They keep, in my opinion, Pat, they keep playing fantasy hockey the way they've been doing business. There's not a plan. Like, you can see what Calgary's doing. There's a plan. Anaheim has a plan.
San Jose.
I've said for years.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a plan. I see it. Okay? Detroit has a plan. I get it. But I said to you for years, this is not like trying and being, you know, this is not something new. I've said this for 3 years. What's the plan in L.A.? Yep. I don't know.
Yep.
You know, you've got 2 years left of Anze Kopitar. He's got a 2-year extension, which kicks in this year. And then we'll see what happens after. You know, Doughty's getting towards the end. You've got Kempe's contract is coming up in a couple of years. So I don't know. I think, it's going to be very, very interesting. And the Kings start out the year, I think it's a 7- or 8-game road trip because they're doing some renovations at crypto.com.
Two more stops. It's our Pacific Division Insider. We're going around the division with Jonathan Davis of NHL Network. Okay. Seattle, Chandler Stephenson, big deal. Brandon Montour of the cup-winning Panthers, big deal. They splash huge on both of them. How much better do you see Seattle being next year after they miss the playoffs?
I think they're going to be better with the additions that they made. I think there was a bit of an overpay on both players, but both players, you know, look, have, you know, earned that right to get overpaid. But bottom line for Seattle, look, there's been a problem down the middle with that team. They address that issue with Chandler Stephenson, and then they needed help on the blue line. They needed another puck mover on that team, and they'll get that. And they got that with Brandon Montour. So I like the fact that they addressed the concerns for this team, and they got players that, you know, that definitely they fill the roles that are needed. So I'd like it, you know, at the price. Well, I mean, we can debate the price that they had to pay for it, but I think it makes them better ultimately.
And let's end in Vegas. All Vegas did was say goodbye to a lot of guys in free agency, whether it was Marchessault or Stephenson. And I know that they added Tomas Hertl and they added Noah Hanifin. And, you know, we really haven't seen those guys fully hit stride as member of the Golden Knights. But is this coming year the first time where, you know, Vegas maybe has some more struggles? I'm just curious as to how you look at this group going into next season.
That's a real kick in the shorts. Depending, you know, you hear the Kelly McCrimmon side. Well, you know, my initial reaction was is that Vegas lost, on free agent frenzy day. But then, as you just, you know, pointed out and quite succinctly, is that their free agent day was the trade deadline in getting Hanifin and Hertl. So, you know, look, you look at this team down the middle with Hertl, Carlson, and Eichel. That's a pretty good 1-2-3 down the middle. And defense is solid. The Marchessault thing is a real kick in the shorts. You hear the Kelly McCrimmon side, you hear the Marchessault side. I tend to think I'll side with Marchessault on this one. I think it's really unfortunate that they couldn't find a way to make it happen. He is a guy that is definitely polarizing in that room. Pat, this is a guy that just never stops yapping.
Yeah.
So, you know, to both the opposition and his own team. Loved in that room. One of the original, one of the original misfits. So it's a tough loss. But okay. So they make a subtle add in Victor Olofsson, you know, after July 1st, that could prove to be, this is a guy that has had success in finding that struggled in finding his ways the last season or so in Buffalo, but, you know, has shown the ability to score. So I don't think that they're far, there was a huge loss. I'm interested to see, though, the effect of what ultimately what losing Marchessault inside that room means to this team. Yeah. I mean, look, he is the guy that leads this team in pretty much every category. And so it is a big loss. The Logan Thompson loss, losing him, I don't think that's a big deal. While he played more games than Aiden Hill this past season, I get the sense from the people I talked to in Vegas that they just never really trusted him at the end of the day. I've had some people tell me that he's more of a guesser when it comes to playing goal. So I don't think that's a big loss. I'm not a big Samsonov fan, but, he doesn't have to be the guy in Vegas. And I think that playing in front of that team, that blue line in Vegas and that system can help make him a better goalie where he you don't need him to steal you a game like you needed to in Toronto.
Right. Well, it's been busy, JD. It's I thought today would be a perfect day to catch up with you, knowing how crazy the last week has been. So, with an important Pacific Division swing in a lot of ways, that would be a good time to spin around the division. So, enjoy your.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask you a quick question? Okay, Sphere. Would you like to see them do it again? I mean, I know that's not likely to happen, but just your thoughts about that whole experience.
It was friggin' awesome. Outside of my flight home issues, Vegas for the draft was A+. The Sphere was great. They nailed it. The NHL absolutely nailed it. So I would say yes, absolutely, all day, every day, for sure.
All right, man. I don't know why Dana White had approved. Did you hear Dana White ripping it?
No.
He's saying that the UFC. Dana White, he was just saying, compared to what we're going to do with USC, this is going to, this is a joke. I was just like, why do you need to do that?
That's very Dana
White. Why? Yeah, I know. Man. All right, bud. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk
have
soon.
A great summer.
Thanks, JD. You too.
All right. All right. All right, take care.
Jonathan Davis, NHL Network, NHL Network Radio, as we start to wrap up this hour. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive in Northeast.